This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Alhamdulillah, Allah has blessed us to reach the 27th night of Ramadan. And as we mentioned before, the Prophet ﷺ seeked out a special night, the night of Laylatul Qadr. And in the hadith, he first exerted himself in the first 10 nights, and Jibreel told him, not in these 10 nights, keep going. And then he spent the next 20 nights, the next 10 nights to get to the 21st night, Jibreel said, no, what you're looking for is in the last 10 nights. And the Prophet ﷺ said, Laylatul Qadr most likely happens in the last 10 nights of Ramadan, most likely in the odd nights. But it could happen in any of those, any night of the last 10 nights. And the scholars over the years, every year there are signs, is this Laylatul Qadr, not Laylatul Qadr? And it appears that the number that comes up the most is the 27th night of Ramadan. And it so is that, of course, the whole Ummah, if you look at all over the city today, tonight, all the masajid are full. And so if you were going to exert yourself, if you were going to push yourself, this is that night. This is that night that we hope is greater than 1,000 months, where all the sins are forgiven, where Jibreel descends, where Allah makes the decrees known. Think about last year, where you were at the end of Ramadan, how your life has changed. Everything that happened to you this past year was decreed on the night of Laylatul Qadr. And we don't know what Allah has installed for us in the year to come. But our du'as carry weight. Our du'as can impact those decrees. So may Allah grant us the strength, the tawfiq, to push through the few hours that we have left of this evening and to make the most of it and keep all of us in your du'as. Ameen. Tonight we begin the fall of the caliphate. The chapter, the starting of part one, it's a bit of history in here, a lot of history, European history. But this is really, this moment shapes the world that we live in. What would happen here would shape all the political issues we have, whether it is the genocide in Kosovo, the problems that we have in Gaza, Kashmir, all of the world's issues can be traced back to this moment in time. And I'd like to give an acknowledgement. People ask, where do you get the facts and stuff? There's a site called thehistoryofislam.com, and this particular presentation is taken from an article by Professor Dr. Nazir Ahmed, who was a PhD holder, and I encourage you to visit the website. There's a lot of excellent material on there. So I want you to keep track. There's a bit of European politics here. And keep track, there's a lot of alliances and backstabbing that's going to go on this evening that will lead to the fall of the caliphate, so you need to keep your wits about you. So we start off in Europe. There was something called the Triple Entente, the Triple Alliance, basically, between England, France, and Russia. The three of them came together to ally with one another. Why? Why is England and France and Russia on the same side? Because Germany is rising up. So far we spoke about French colonialism, Spanish colonialism, Russia, England. We didn't speak about Germany. Germany was very late to the game. But Germany was going through a massive industrialization. And sort of towards the end of the 1800s, the 19th century, she became the most powerful country on mainland Europe. England is still the most powerful country, but in mainland Europe, Germany is becoming a monster. And France is really worried that Germany is going to start to want to get in on the colonial game. So England and France and Russia agree that if Germany does anything, we will attack her from both sides. So they enter this alliance. If one of us gets attacked by Germany, we all three jump in. Germany is, of course, now trying to find colonies, and that's why very late they have a colony here in Namibia. And Germany is actually the most open of all the colonial powers with the Ottoman Empire. The Sultan and Germany had a very good relationship. There was a train line that ran from Munich all the way to Istanbul, the Orient Express. So the Kaiser of Germany and the Sultan of the Ottomans had a bit of a good understanding. Meanwhile, the Ottoman Empire, as we had seen now for the last few evenings, is on her last legs. She's losing war after war. Her territories are being invaded. And this was really highlighted when the Caucasus, that we spoke about Dagestan last night, when the Ottomans were unable to defend the Caucasus from the Russians were literally on the doorstep of Turkey, of mainland Turkey. And the empire at this point in time was so deep in debt that 80% of the budget was to repay other European powers. The Ottoman Empire was completely bankrupt at this point in time. And so many calls internally to secularize, time to reform, to change. And many of these voices were Turkish-born sons, but studied in other parts of Europe. They studied in Paris, they studied in England, and now they come back to Turkey, to Istanbul, and they are saying that we need to modernize. By modernize, we need to get rid of the Sharia. We need to get rid of our backward Islamic heritage, and we need to become a European nation. We must become colonial. We need to become more European. And so as the century turns, that the Ottomans are really struggling to keep up. She's now called the sick man. The Ottomans are called the sick man of Europe, really a shadow of itself. And countries are looking to invade, and the Libyans, the Italians invade Libya. And so in 1911, Libya, which of course is a Muslim country, North Africa, gets invaded by Italy. The Ottoman Sultan sends their two best generals, Enver Bey and Mustafa Kemal. Now remember these two names. Enver Bey and Mustafa Kemal are sent to Libya to fight and defend the Libyan colony against the army is sent to Libya to defend against the Italians. Now when this happens, Turkey is now committed to one front. And another part of the empire will begin to fall apart. And this area that we're going to talk about is a bit complicated, but this is what we call the powder keg of the world. This is the spark that's going to bring the entire world into war. This tiny region is going to cause the whole world to go to war. And this is the Balkans. The Balkans is what we know about Bosnia, Chechnya, Serbia. This little area between Turkey and Western Europe, smallish area, but it is a area with lots of different ethnic groups, lots of different religions, they were all controlled by the Ottomans. The Ottomans for 500 years kept this area in check. The Ottoman Empire ruled this region. And the map that you see, that's the Balkans. If you look at the next map, the map will show you the different colors. So the purple color, those are Orthodox Christians. They are Orthodox Christians, and the head of the Orthodox Church is in Russia. The yellow group, the Croatians, they are Catholic Christians, and they are very much aligned to Austria. And the little patches of green are Muslims. So you have lots of different ethnic groups living side by side, a lot of different religions living side by side. The Ottomans kept this area in check by ruling it. But once its army was in Libya, it could no longer keep the Balkans under control. And so this region flares up, it explodes, and every group fights for its own independence. Long story short, eventually the Muslims themselves, the Muslims first they kick the Muslims out. The Orthodox Christians, backed by Russia, and the Catholics, backed by the Austrians, they join up and they kick the Muslims out. The Ottomans have no option but to cede this entire territory. They leave their armies and they leave the entire Balkans. And that's why we still have, until recently, until the 1990s, a genocide, the genocide in Europe to the Muslims in that land, because they were at the mercy of these two groups. After the Ottomans leave, and the Muslims are being persecuted and massacred, the two parties, the Catholics and the Orthodox Christians, are not happy. What now? Now they go at it against each other. They go at it against each other. So the Orthodox Church, the Serbs, backed by the Russians, fight against the Croatians, backed by the Austrians, and this area falls into extreme chaos and anarchy. To try and solve the problem, so for example, if you look at the number of people, the armies collectively in this region, 700,000 people pour in, fighting different countries, fighting each other. The Ottoman armies alone is 100,000. It decides to pull out. We can't defend this land, and so they basically leave it. So the Ottomans lose control. Now you have a war between the Catholics and the Orthodoxes in the Balkans. And to try and solve this, the Austrian Empire, so there's an empire called the Austrian Empire. They send the crown prince to try and solve this problem. The Austrian Catholic Empire goes and send their crown prince to solve this problem, and he's assassinated by a Serbian terrorist. He's assassinated, the crown prince of the Austrian Empire. And this is a chain reaction that's going to give the whole world into, bring the world into war. So if you look at the next slide, how the world goes to war, you must keep mind of these different alliances. The Serbs are allied with the Serbs are allied with Russia. And the Serbs killed the Austrian Empire, the crown prince of the Austrian Empire. So Austria declares war on Serbia. Right? Obviously makes sense. You killed our crown prince, we declare war on you. But because Serbia is aligned with Russia, Russia declares war on Austria. Now Austria and Germany are united. So Germany declares war on Russia. But remember the triple intent. If one gets declared war, so because Germany declared war on Russia, England and France has to declare war on Germany. And obviously it's not just one country, these are colonies. These are colonies. So again, just to recap quickly, just so you keep the alliances right. The Austrian-Hungarian Empire, they send their crown prince to Serbia to try and solve this problem between the Orthodox Christians and the Catholics. He gets assassinated by a single terrorist. Austria, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, holds Serbia accountable for that. They declare war on Serbia. Because of that, Russia declares war on Austria. And then Germany declares war on Russia. And then England and France declares war on Germany. Now, the entire, all of Europe is going into war. The Ottomans actually did not need to get into this war. They were already out of the Balkans. And the Sultan was not keen on going to war. The Ottomans were in no position to go to war. They didn't have, their army was exhausted. They were in a huge debt crisis. But the Young Turks, and also the Minister of Defense, Enver Bey, who spoke about, they committed secretly behind the Sultan's back that we will go to war. And our closest ally in Europe are the Germans. The Germans are the one group that was still open to the Ottomans. And what tipped the scales finally, the Germans said, fine, we'll pay off your debt. If you join on our side, Ottoman Empire, we will pay off your debt. And they paid something like, 2 billion kurush, I don't know how that is, but it basically pays off the entire Ottoman debt. The Kaiser of Germany said, we'll pay you this. And when he gave that commitment, the Ottomans went to war, and they declared war on Russia. And because they declared war on Russia, England and France declared war on the Ottoman Empire. And so now the entire world is going to war. And if you look at, they said, the world on one side, you have Germany, Austria, and the Ottomans. On the other side, you have England, Russia, and France. So, initially, the war in Europe becomes a very stagnant, static war. The Germans invade France, but they make no progress. It becomes a bogged-down trench warfare. The amount of people that die, we're talking about 70 million people fighting at the same time. 70 million. No, this is the first time we also have industrial machinery, planes and tanks. We're killing people at the industrial scales. Millions are dying all the time. And this war still is the deadliest war in human history. Even though there'll be nuclear bombs in World War II, World War I is still the most devastating war in human history. So the war on the between France and Germany, there's no progress. There's no progress between Russia. So the allies decide the weak guy in the alliance is Turkey. If we can bring Turkey down from there, we can attack Germany. And so the first invasion that they plan is to invade Turkey. You would know that Constantinople is on the Bosphorus, on the Sea of Marmara. If you can invade Constantinople and you can capture this very strategic channel, then you have an access to the Mediterranean Sea. And so the British and the French, and of course the British by her colonies, Australia, New Zealand troops are brought all the way to Turkey, and they invade Istanbul. It's mentioned by Dr. Nazir. He says 1 million troops of the Allies land in Turkey to try and invade Turkey, and this is called the Battle of Gallipoli. And in this point, the Ottomans are fighting on home soil, something which had not happened in centuries, fighting for survival. And at this moment, that general Kemal Mustafa would become Ataturk. He leads a massive resistance and is able to actually push out the English and the French. The one victory that they had was this victory. They were able to secure Constantinople from being captured by the Allies. And on both sides, 100,000 people die on both sides of this campaign. For 9 months, they're fighting to get control of Constantinople, but they were unable to capture it. So the Ottomans were able to keep Turkey safe. So then Britain went to its second tactic, and they are the masters of this. Divide and rule. Don't fight head on. Why not cause the entire Ottoman Empire to crumble within. They've done that to India. They took a handful of people, a shipping company, and brought down a continent of people by allying and allying and backstabbing and all of this. And so their plan was, let us divide and rule. We speak to the Arabs, we'll speak to the Saudis, we'll speak to the Yemenis, we'll speak to everyone and tell them to break free from the Ottoman Empire. And so the British go to work by calling for the Arabs to rebel against the Ottomans. Makkah is ruled by someone called, the person in, all of this is ruled by the Ottomans officially, but each region had its own governor. And the governor of Makkah is called Sharif Hussein. Sharif means the family of the Prophet. For 1,000 years, the Sharif family, the family of Ahlul Bayt, they were in charge of Makkah and Medina. This was something out of respect for them. So every time a new Khalifa came, governor came, they realized, look, we just leave Makkah and Medina under the family of the Prophet. So the British went to this man, Sharif Hussein. They said, listen, we will make you the new Khalifa. And it will be an Arab Khalifa. Side with us. Rebel against the Ottoman Sultan, the Khalifa, and we'll make you the new Khalifa. And Sharif Hussein believed the British, and he declared a jihad against the Ottomans. Subhanallah. At the same time, while he's declaring jihad and asking all the Arabs in Syria, in Iraq, in Saudi to rebel against the Ottomans, the British are dealing with the Saudis to have their own, the Wahhabi revolution within mainland Saudi Arabia. They also have a third agreement with the Zionists to tell them at the end of this war, we'll give you a state in Palestine. Side with us and we'll give you Palestine as your own independent. They're having three agreements. With a master agreement that is very, very secret between Russia. So there's three agreements with different groups, but they have a master agreement with France called the Sykes-Picot Agreement. England and France already decided at the beginning of the war, when we win, how are we going to cut up this empire? There was a master plan. You are going to get Syria and Lebanon, France, Iraq and Saudi and Palestine, Jordan is going to go to England, and Russia will take Turkey. This agreement was in place. So the British were able to successfully, by implanting their agents, Lawrence of Arabia, the kind of this person, cause division within the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was one of the few empires that was not just, they didn't speak one language, it was a mixture of different types of people all across. That is why there were no borders. There wasn't a country called Syria, a country called Lebanon. It was each ethnic group had their own, millah, their own group, their own leadership, and the Ottomans recognized all of them. Now the British are telling them, each one of you can get a country of your own. This is the opportunity. Rebel against the Ottomans. And so the Middle East unravels bit by bit, and the Ottomans are unable to keep control. And every division we have today, every faction you find, Syrian civil war, the genocide in Kosovo, the Muslim-Hindu fight in Kashmir, it's because of the British. They made sure that people who lived side by side for hundreds of years, there was such deep hatred against one another, neighbors killing one another, so that they could go to war and you come in and you divide and conquer. This was the master plan of the British, which of course worked. And so, two other big events that would turn basically bring the war to its conclusion. In the midst of all this war, Russia pulls out. Russia pulls out of the war because she goes through a revolution, the communist revolution. Well, during this fighting, Russia is losing millions and millions of troops. The people are dying and starving, and the people rebel against the Kaiser or the Tsar of Russia, and they massacre the entire royal family, and the communists take over, and they say, we want nothing to do with this war. They pull out of the war, and they actually publish, the communists publish all the agreements that the British and the Russians and the French had. They made it known, and that's why we know of the Sykes-Picot Agreement. The Sykes-Picot Agreement was extremely secretive between these three governments because they're all lying to everybody else. But between the three of them, we are together. So the communists made this known. And how silly, the Sharif of Hussein, even after this was public, the British told him, don't worry, that's just we're going to keep our word to you. And he continued believing that the British are going to honor the agreement and make him the Khalifa. So the Russians pull out. And perhaps it looked for a time that maybe Germany was going to win and the Ottomans were going to win. But then, of course, Uncle Sam steps in. Mighty USA. America, who has been out of all this war, now America enters the fray on the side of England, deciding that it was better in their interest to support England and France. And with American might and American muscle, the tide turns. And slowly but surely, Germany, Austria, the Ottomans are exhausted, they're unable to fight, and the British forces have opened the road to invade the Ottoman lands. And subhanAllah, the British march on. And look at in succession, Baghdad, the capital of the Muslim world, of the caliphate, the seat of the caliphate for, you know, we spoke about how amazing Baghdad was. It falls to the British Empire, 1917. The Ottoman flag is brought down and the British flag is put up. A few months later, on Christmas, the British army enters Jerusalem, kick the Ottoman soldiers out, and they conquer Jerusalem. The first time since Salah ad-Din that a occupying, non-Muslim occupying force conquers Jerusalem. Then a few months later, they conquer Damascus, the Umayyad Caliphate. This was the seat of the Umayyad power. And then at the end of the year, the Ottomans surrender and the British and French enter Constantinople. This must have been the lowest point in our history. All the capitals of Islam, besides for Medina, was occupied, the first time in our history, was occupied by a foreign power. Every single major Muslim city is now, the British flag is flying over it, from India all the way to Constantinople. And the Khalifa is still there, but he is, of course, completely at the mercy. This is perhaps, as we said, the lowest point the Ummah has been since the Mongolian invasion. And we say, Alhamdulillah, perhaps out of his wisdom, Sayyidina Ali shifted the capital away from Medina. Otherwise, it would have been British troops in Medina and Mecca. And so, with this, with Germany surrendering and the Ottomans surrendering, the Ottomans have no option but to now accept a very terrible, disgraceful, humiliating treaty, which would put them completely under the control of the British. All the enemies of the Ottomans over the years, the Armenians, the Greeks, they would all line up to take their share. And to now, different armies are about to invade mainland Turkey. Even Constantinople is going to be divided up. And basically, the Turks are waiting to be completely invaded by outside forces. And we'll talk about that tomorrow, inshallah. Last night we asked Imam Shamil of Northern Caucasus, what was his nickname? He's of course the Lion of Dagestan. The Lion of Dagestan. Adam Kasim? Kasim? Adam Kasim? Oh, the back. Shukran. And let's see. Where are we? Iriana Adams. Oh, mashallah. Okay. Okay, she is, yeah? Seems like that. Okay, tonight's question, how much gold did Germany send to Istanbul? How much gold did they send to Istanbul? Inshallah, easy question. We continue our Qiyamul Layl program. And just a reminder about whenever Eid is, whether it is going to be Wednesday or Thursday, we encourage you to please join us for our Mass Eid Salah in the Eidgah. Shukran so much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.